And welcome to the Cutaneous Connection, a podcast from the staff of Dermatology Times, aiming to provide you with the latest updates in dermatology, to exclusive interviews with leading industry experts, and a glimpse of what goes on behind the scenes. I'm your host, Morgan Petronelli.
Today we're discussing antibiotics as a treatment option for acne, currently available tetracycline class treatments, antibiotic resistance, and how one recently approved antibiotic treatment for acne separates itself from the others. Let's dive right in. Today I have joining me Dr. Christopher Bunick, Associate Professor of Dermatology at Yale School of Medicine, specializing in general medical dermatology and dermatologic surgery. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Bunick, for joining me today. So let's start off with the first question. What is the history of antibiotic use for acne? And, you know, how have perceptions of it evolved?
Sure. Thank you for having me. Oral antibiotics have been used for decades to treat acne vulgaris. The rationale behind using oral antibiotics for acne is that they possess both antibacterial and anti-inflammatory properties, which ultimately lead to improved clarity of the skin. The antibacterial effect is against Cutibacterium acnes, or what we call C. acnes. And the anti-inflammatory effect is thought to be due to the ability of these antibiotics to inhibit neutrophil chemotaxis, or what is known as the recruitment into the tissues, as well as their ability to inhibit metalloproteinase activity. And the most common antibiotic class that's used in treating acne is what is called the tetracycline family or tetracycline class. And this group originally included tetracycline, and it gets its name because of its chemical structure, tetra meaning four, and tetracycline has four rings. And chemical modifications have been made to this base tetracycline over the decades or years to improve the efficacy and tolerability. And that's where you now have doxycycline, minocycline, and sarecycline, which has emerged. These three are now the big three tetracycline based antibiotics used orally for the treatment of acne vulgaris. So while the class or tetracycline class originally emerged in the 1940s, doxycycline was approved in the 60s, minocycline in the 1970s, and then there was about a 40-year gap where there wasn't a new chemical entity in the tetracycline family for acne, and that changed in 2018 when sarecycline was approved by the FDA for specifically the treatment of acne vulgaris. So it was a welcome addition after 40 years. And overall, the perceptions about the use of oral antibiotics, in my opinion, they have changed largely due to public concerns over the development of antibiotic resistance. And this has caused dermatologists to really think about the duration of the antibiotic therapy that they give. Do you limit the antibiotics to 3 months, or do you go longer? In the past, 6 months, a year, 2 years, were not unheard of. Whereas today, the push to limit to 3 months is real. And then the second perception that's changed is just which drug in general has the least propensity for developing resistance. And patients are increasingly savvy with access to information online, and that they want to know more about the therapies they're being prescribed. So lastly, the emergence of the microbiome as a hot topic in medicine has now pushed patients even further to consider how the medicines might harm their normal flora, such as the normal microbes that live in the gastrointestinal tract. There are definitely many patients that comment about how they have a sensitive stomach, and that plays a role in how these antibiotics get used in patients.
So my second question is, what are the differences between broad spectrum and narrow spectrum antibiotics? Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, so the concept of broad spectrum versus narrow spectrum basically means how bacterial species, whether they're infectious or commensal, meaning normal to the human body, how are they targeted by specific antibiotics? Broad spectrum antibiotics can inhibit many types of bacteria throughout the body, whereas narrow spectrum antibiotics will inhibit a limited number of bacteria in specific locations. And the concern is that broad spectrum antibiotics will harm some of the normal bacterial species that comprise the normal human microbiome. Broad spectrum antibiotics that are used in acne include doxycycline, minocycline, tetracycline, which we've mentioned, as well as azithromycin, amoxicillin, and trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole. So there's a number of broad spectrum agents. But when we talk about narrow spectrum agents, there's very few. The new sarecycline, phytomoxacin, vancomycin, and betaquilin. But of these, only sarecycline has actually FDA approved for acne. So it shows you that there's actually not a significant number of antibiotics that are narrow spectrum for the treatment of acne vulgaris. And this actually represents a big unmet need in the clinical therapy of acne.
So on to that, what are some of the long-term effects of using broad spectrum antibiotics for acne?
There are several concerns with the long-term use of oral antibiotics for acne. First, the most common concern that I hear from patients is about the development of drug resistance. Patients are really in tune with the public messaging that drug resistance is a problem. Patients want to be reassured that their therapy is safe. In particular, they will not develop drug resistance that will then later come back to harm them in the future if they have a severe infection and need an antibiotic to treat that. Second, long-term use of broad-spectrum antibiotics can alter the human microbiome. So for example, the gastrointestinal tract. The concern is that altering of the microbiome can eliminate the beneficial aspects of the normal flora. And this includes the depletion of gut bacterial diversity, because we have a lot of different bacteria that are symbiotic in our gastrointestinal tract. So this concept is sometimes referred to as microbial dysbiosis, or in other words, these broad spectrum antibiotics can alter the normal microbes that live either on our skin or within our body. And third, the long-term use of oral antibiotics, like any other medication that's used in medicine, frankly, carries with it the potential for medication-induced adverse events. This could range from GI upset, such as nausea and vomiting, to headaches or dizziness, to pigmentary changes in the skin, to photosensitivity, or the development of a rash.
So what happens to the skin/patient when antibiotic resistance occurs?
So clinically, when antibiotic resistance occurs, it's highly likely that the medication will no longer help control the acne. Patients could experience treatment failure with worsening of their skin, and then this is likely to prompt the patient to return to the office and seek advice on a new treatment regimen. That's really one of the most common scenarios I see in clinic. Beyond the effect on the acne therapy itself, there's real concern that bacteria, such as Staphylococcus aureus, for example, could become harder to eradicate once they have developed antibiotic resistance. So these resistant bacteria can lead to infections that are more clinically severe or more difficult to treat. And this is really why we don't want the resistance to develop in the first place. We discussed earlier that oral antibiotics, particularly broad spectrum ones, have the potential to alter the human microbiome by harming the good bacteria that humans possess. Bacteria that develop antibiotic resistance, however, can be just as problematic because they can disturb the proper ratios of bacteria that comprise the human microbiome at any given site in the body.
And my next question, you know, how are you managing your patient's expectations with this treatment option?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's very important to communicate with your patients in an honest manner. And that is that there is potential for adverse events to occur with any medication, including oral acne vulgaris drugs. One of the most common ways that dermatologists are currently trying to reduce the potential for drug resistance is to use combination therapy. This can take many forms. For mild to moderate acne, it could mean the combination of topical agents like topical antibiotics combined with benzoyl peroxide or retinoids. For moderate to severe inflammatory acne, and for patients that have bad truncal acne who desire fast results, oral antibiotics are ideal first line, and they can be combined with topical agents too. However, I would try to use narrow spectrum oral antibiotics when feasible, because this really can limit the unwanted side effects.
And what antibiotic treatment options are available for acne?
Focusing on oral antibiotics, the major class of prescribed oral antibiotics is tetracyclines, which we noted earlier includes doxycycline, minocycline, and the new FDA-approved medication sarecycline. There are other agents that are less commonly used, such as trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole and azithromycin. But of these agents, the only one that is narrow spectrum is sarecycline. It specifically targets gram-positive bacteria. Sarecycline is different from doxycycline and minocycline because it has a large chemical moiety that's added on at what is called the C7 position of that four-ring structure that the tetracycline antibiotics share. So importantly, sarecycline exhibits a reduced side effect profile in the clinical studies of that drug. It has less headaches and other vestibular disturbances like dizziness because it has a very low blood-brain barrier crossing. And it's also the only FDA-approved oral acne medication that is narrow spectrum, and that is because it has less effect on gram-negative gastrointestinal flora. So it's thought to have, or it has been shown to have in clinical studies, less effect on GI upset. And so it might be more tolerable for patients to take. Sarecycline has also been found to have a very low propensity to induce resistance in C. acnes.
So how has your research impacted our understanding of oral acne medicines?
Yes, thank you for that question. So my laboratory research focuses on the biochemistry and structural biology of skin-related proteins. In particular, I've been doing X-ray crystallography research for almost 25 years, going back to my junior high school science fair project. To a large extent, my work in dermatology is focused on filaggrin and keratins to date, but I became really intrigued by the different chemical structure of sarecycline, this so-called C7 chemical moiety that it possesses. Clinically, dermatologists often find that some patients do better with a particular tetracycline antibiotic, while another group of patients does better with a different tetracycline antibiotic. And the molecular reason or basis for why the oral tetracycline antibiotics might function differently in specific patient populations is really unknown. What is known is that tetracycline antibiotics bind to the 30S subunit of the 70S bacterial ribosome, where they function by primarily inhibiting protein translation. With my collaborator, Dr. Yuri Polikhinov from the University of Illinois at Chicago, we really wanted to know how the C7 moiety on sarecycline impacted its ability to bind to the 30S ribosome compared to other tetracyclines. In essence, we wanted to decipher the structural mechanism of action of how sarecycline bound its target binding site on the 30S subunit of the 70S ribosome. And recently, this work was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, and I'll give you a small synopsis of the key findings. So what we did is we determined two X-ray crystal structures of sarecycline bound to the 70S bacterial ribosome. And these crystal structures revealed that sarecycline binds at the decoding center of the small 30S ribosomal subunit, which is similar to the other tetracycline antibiotics. That part is the same compared to doxycycline and minocycline and tetracycline. But what we observed different was that the C7 moiety of sarecycline extended into the messenger RNA channel inside the ribosome, where sarecycline can directly interfere with messenger RNA movement through the channel and actually disrupt codon-anticodon interactions that are needed by the ribosome to actually translate that messenger RNA into protein. And this mechanism of action of direct messenger RNA contact by sarecycline had not been previously observed by any other tetracycline antibiotic. And it is, in fact, a direct consequence of this chemical moiety at sarecycline C7 position. It is the longest C7 moiety in the entire family by far. We also found in our research that sarecycline is a potent inhibitor of the initiation step, or the very earliest step of protein synthesis, which also distinguished it from some of the other tetracycline antibiotics, which function a little bit later in the protein synthesis process. Our findings suggest that sarecycline has unique aspects to its mechanism of action, and we think that these account for several of the defining properties of this medication, such as narrow spectrum activity and low propensity for development of antimicrobial resistance. With regard to the antimicrobial resistance, our crystal structure showed that the special C7 position on sarecycline also interfered with a key bacterial resistance mechanism, what is known as ribosomal protection proteins. A classic ribosomal protection protein is TET-M. TET-M can bind to the ribosome and dislodge a tetracycline class antibiotic, which is bound at the 30S ribosomal site. Our crystal structures showed that sarecycline is distinguished or different than doxycycline and minocycline because that C7 moiety that's so long or large actually extends and occupies space that TET-M would need to come in and dislodge the sarecycline. So that C7 moiety actually prevents TET-M ribosomal protection protein from getting close enough to the active site to dislodge the sarecycline. TET-M and sarecycline thus compete for the same binding site on the ribosome, and our structural data suggests that sarecycline wins this battle, which is really was an unexpected finding in our research. Ultimately, this observation or finding has direct relevance to sarecycline's use in the clinic for acne therapy because we want medications that have low propensity for developing drug resistance. So while sarecycline is a narrow spectrum oral antibiotic, which will reduce unwanted adverse effects on the patient microbiome, it also has this reduced capacity for antimicrobial resistance. These are both very favorable traits for an oral medication for acne vulgaris that might be needed long-term to control a patient's acne. To date, sarecycline is the only oral antibiotic approved for acne vulgaris with a low resistance claim on its label. And we are really excited just that our research could help understand why that is the case. So in summary of our research, our work emphasizes an important point, and that is that the various tetracycline acne medications cannot simply be lumped into one category and presumed to work the same. Our data shows that the different chemical modifications between doxycycline, minocycline, and sarecycline actually make a real difference in the mechanism of action of how these drugs work. And further research to understand how these differences in mechanism of action translate into clinical response differences in patients is really important for our future research.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Bunick, and you have a great day.
Thank you.
For more Dermatology Times content, from articles and videos to podcasts, you can visit www.dermatologytimes.com.